Sanaa. On the 18th of September, 1979. A genuine Samana, or a real bhikkhu, is one who is truly intent for truth and Dhamma. During the time of the Lord Buddha and the time following, there was real substance in about 90% of cases. The text described the various lives and biographies of various savakas. They left home coming from the various classes and castes of people. But they did not see these things as more important than Dhamma. They were intent on this Dhamma and applied it in their practice. They took this Dhamma as their highest treasured possession. This is true with every savaka. The savakas consisted of every class and caste of people. There were kings and princes, court officials, wealthy men, and merchants, and ordinary people. And there were even the poor and the outcasts. The Lord Buddha did not harbor any aversion for them, for Dhamma does not have any aversion for anyone. It is full of metta, and the hearts of the Lord Buddha and all of the savakas were likewise full to the brim with metta. There was nothing in their hearts that could cause them to have any pride. This snobbery or self-esteem is the work of the kilesas, causing people to become deluded and infatuated with it. All of the savaka had their heart set an intent on Dhamma and earnestly practiced it following the way for the sake of truth and Dhamma. Some of them came out from the highest and most refined class of people, from the families of kings. The four living requisites for kings were of the highest and most refined quality. When they left home and took the going forth, they did not take along with them their old habits and ways of life. This included the Lord Buddha and many of the savakas who came from kings' families. None of them exhibited their kingly ways, which is just the way of the world. When they left home, they also cast away all the four living requisites of kings. All they had were the four requisites of the Samana. These four living requisites only come about through the faith or sattā of the lay devotees and from the kind-hearted people. They can be in plenty or lacking, very refined or very coarse. It just depends on what people could afford. But all of the savakas were contented with them because their heart already went in accordance with Dhamma, even before they had attained to Dhamma. The contrasting difference between that time and this time is like two different worlds. It seems as if it is not of the same sasana. For the ordinary people and merchants who had lived a hard life, it was no problem for them. Those who were used to living in luxury and easy circumstances, the kingly life and refined ways of living, had cast away all of these things. They were not concerned for dukkha or hardship. They practiced and followed the way of the Samana, the way of the bhikkhu, taking it as their basis of heart. They had totally left their worldly ways behind. This is what a real and genuine bhikkhu is like. When one goes out to live in the forests and the hills, there aren't many things that one can take with one to provide one with ease and comfort, like the kinds of comforts the world is used to. Things have to go according to what is available. I used to wander in the hills and forests myself, and I have had some experience of this way of life, so I know what it is like. People give the things that they have, the things that they use, and the things that they eat, following their faith and conviction. And I have some knowledge of this. There is a great contrast from living in the town to living in the forest. And this concerns the living requisites. With this much experience, I can already make comparisons with today and the time of the Lord Buddha, and have some idea what it was like for the Savakas. There, the dwelling was usually in the forest, and had to be at least 1 kilometer away from the vicinity of the village or the town. Or they could be living along the hillsides, or in caves, or by the cliffs. How could they find any ease and comfort from these places? Their hearts, however, were already going in accordance with Dhamma, even before they had attained to Dhamma. They were seeking and endeavoring for Dhamma with diligent effort, pure intention, and the heart that goes in the way of Dhamma. This was how they trod the way before they could become our Sanghaṃ Saraṇaṃ Gacchāmi. A practitioner of Dhamma must not look up to anyone in such a way as he overlooks the Lord Buddha, the Savaka Sangha, and the Dhamma, the way. One would then not be disappointed. When one is going through dukkha and hardship, one has to take up the Lord Buddha and all of the Savaka Sangha as one's ideal and follow their example. All of them had to undergo a lot of difficulty and hardship. They did not take the easy way out. We have to think in this way, we who are the practitioners, as this can be a reminder serving to arouse our heart to become tough and strong, by depending on the example of those who had been tough and strong, and who had gone before us. In crossing the Vata Samsara, which is a vast, boundless, and massive heap of dukkha, one has to go through a lot of difficulty and hardship, the same way that the Lord Buddha and all of the Savakas did before. They encountered a lot of dukkha and torment, and this was especially severe for those who came from the most high and refined classes, much more so than for the merchants and ordinary people who had already been through a lot of hardship before going forth. People are not the same as they come from different backgrounds and different ways of life. So when they have to change their way of living, there must be dukkha and hardship. But they were not concerned about it. They were only mindful and heedful of the instruction given by the Lord Buddha and the way of attaining to the truth and Dhamma. They totally trusted their lives and took up the truth and the refuges with the teaching of the Lord Buddha. They considered the four living requisites, gifts and offerings that the lay people had offered to them as the means of sustaining their lives so that they could fully exert in their practice the development of the Samana Dhamma and so that they could attain to the realm free from dukkha following their aim and intention, something that they would be happy with. For this reason, they did not have any concern or worries for the worldly gains, any more than they would for the truth and Dhamma. This is the principle of heart that we have to take up and follow. It is the Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, the way that the Lord Buddha trod, which I have explained countless times. It is the same way with the Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. We have to take up their way of practice. We should not see anyone else as transcending or being more worthy than the Lord Buddha or the Savakas. Nobody can be as circumspect and thorough and accurate and correct as the Lord Buddha and all of the Savakas in the practice of the way that steadily leads one to the state free from dukkha and enable one to attain to that state. This is how we must take them up. If there is dukkha, then let us face it. How can there be no dukkha when we are opposing and struggling with the kilesas, which have been all-powerful and domineering within the heart for an immensely long time? We are the storehouse of the kilesas, and we don't even know how long the kilesas have been ruling over us, over our heart. This is very critical. So surely they must be very powerful. So in this contention for the elimination of the kilesas, or in the attempt to become more powerful than the kilesas, if we don't fight the way that the Lord Buddha and all the Savakas did, then how are we ever going to come across the victory? The dukkha, hardship, and difficulty of doing the work of exertion is inherent within this world. This world is the world of pursuit and undertaking, because it is not dead people and dead animals that inhabit this world. The animals have their work to do. They have to make a living and are constantly exposed to risking their lives. It is the same way with human beings. Everywhere in this world, people have to go through dukkha and hardship in their work and undertaking for the sake of staying alive. With us, we are abundantly supplied with the living requisites and all sorts of offerings. There are plenty of kind-hearted people in this country who are always ready to support and assist us. We who are earnest and intent about our practice and worthy of their respect and admiration, they are happy for a share of our merits. There are many of this sort of person, and that is why we never have any problem with our living requisites, apart from getting a lot of them, or getting too much of them, to the extent where they flood all over us, leaving no place for Dhamma to grow. Why then can we tread this path of practice, cultivating and developing ourselves to the utmost of our effort, following the way of truth and Dhamma that the Lord Buddha and the Savakas trod before us, passing on this teaching down to us? The dukkha that arises from our pursuit and undertaking is something that we all accept. We are now all undergoing dukkha that arises from our exertion in treading the path that will deliver us from this dukkha. This is the dukkha that arises out of our pure intention. This is the dukkha that prevents all kinds of influences that can cause dukkha and hardship to arise in the future, unlike all the other kinds of work which run the risk of all sorts of damage, as it is being done in the world. This is the work of purity. You must set your heart on this work and concentrate in your practice. You have to be strong, resolute, and courageous. Don't be weak. This is the path leading to the state of deliverance. In your striving, you should not look elsewhere. In looking at the kilesas, you must look at them within your heart. The heart constantly brings up the kilesas, avicca, patteya, sankhara. Listen to that. Avicca is the source, the vital force that thrusts and pushes out by way of sankhara and vijnana, and by way of eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body. It projects outwards so that it can become entangled with the external things, then rounding up all the dukkha and hardship into ourselves. When we don't have sati to discern the nature of these things with circumspection, then we will be constantly amassing and accumulating the kilesas within our hearts, in spite of us being practitioners. We will get to see this very clearly. When it is the time for us to know this, then the knowledge will not be able to keep away from us. I practiced before, and I am not boasting. When we are struggling along and moving on with difficulty, let us be aware that this is so. We have to make ourselves tough and strong, and we have to make ourselves skillful and proficient, so that we don't always have to be engaged in an uphill struggle. Let this be only in the beginning stages, when it is quite natural with everyone. When we really try to develop and train ourselves, then we can arrive at skillfulness and competence. We can become strong and hardy, efficient and able in our sati, panya, satta, and virya. They will all arise simultaneously. They will all unite into the heart, so that they can become a source of power that can eradicate and overcome the kilesas and asavas that used to be the rulers over the heart. We will be able to do this gradually. When sati, panya, satta, and virya become strengthened and more powerful and accumulate and collect in the heart, we will see the building up of the kilesas, tanha and asava, and the building up of the heap of dukkha by the kilesas, and that they are all being built up within the heart. We will also know steadily the way of correcting and overcoming them. Don't have the understanding that the kilesas are anywhere else but in the heart. The true and genuine Vata Chakra is the heart that leads us to go around the cycle of birth, aging, illness, and death ceaselessly. I investigated to the utmost ability of my sati and panya, right on down to the present. I have no doubt that there is nothing else that is the cause of birth than avichā paccayā saṅkhārā, that is firmly embedded deep within the heart, to the extent where one is not able to differentiate this heart from avichā. This is the fundamental principle. When we drive into the heart, we will get to see it. This is the significant point. This is the prime source of the ceaseless wandering. Its attendants and followers go out by way of the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, and through rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. All there is just the affairs and business of the kilesas. Every activity is the affair of the kilesas that flow out to gather the mass of dukkha into ourselves. This mass of dukkha is the consequence of all this thinking and concocting, which is being propelled and pushed out by avichā, because avichā is the master. For this reason, the Lord taught us to be firm and resolute in our practice of bhavana. We have to focus our effort and attention right at this point, the four satipatthana. Listen, this is the Dhamma principle that guarantees and certifies the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana. The Dhamma principle that guarantees the total destruction and elimination of the kilesas. This is the four satipatthana, or the four Ariya Satya. This is a crucial principle. What is the four satipatthana, and where is it to be found? What are the four Ariya Satya, and where are they to be found? We all know about these things, so let us not overlook them. As a practitioner, you must be really earnest with your practice. You who want to be followers of the Tathagata, who want to emancipate yourselves with this terrible punishment and immense dukkha within your heart. It is embedded within your heart due to the influence of the kilesas. We have to exert to our fullest and to the utmost. We must gradually come across victory. Then it can be said that we are competent, that we are courageous. And who will be the one who will be able to catch up with the footprints of the Lord Buddha, and also the footprints of all of the Savakas, by way of practice and exertion, by strength and energy, and not by weakness? The citta is the one that thinks and concocts. It does this constantly. When one has sati, it still concocts and thinks. And when one doesn't have any sati, it also thinks. This natural thinking process of the citta exists under the power an influence of avijja. It is avijja that propels and pushes out this thinking. It is therefore the affair of samudaya, 99% of the time. If one is a practitioner and one doesn't observe, then 99% of the time will be samudaya. And when one is absent-minded, then it is 100%. What does it concoct up? It concocts up love and hate, anger and aversion, sorrow and happiness. Both the present and the future are about this love and hate, aversion and anger. They all come out of the heart, which is the one which draws up these images or pictures. It keeps on constantly drawing up these pictures. It concocts up this and concocts up that. Once these concoctions come up, the citta then becomes immersed and obsessed with them. How can the citta, within the course of the day, remain still, without drawing up any pictures, which are these concoctions and thinking to fool and deceive itself? Is this really possible? The citta lives with its own deceptions, but right now we cannot yet comprehend this. For this reason, we have to investigate and develop the citta so that it can come to calm. When it has enough calm, then one must investigate with panya, digging and searching into the four satipatthana, which is the body. Kayanupassana satipatthana. One has to investigate the body to clearly perceive its nature. What is this body made up of? We have to look at this body with intention and with mindfulness, with attentiveness and concentration, with the heart that is bent on the truth. And this is what exertion is all about. This is not merely investigating blindly or blindly looking, like groping in the dark for a while, and then letting oneself be dragged away and deceived by the kilesas and samudaya. This is not the way of exertion. This is not the way of one who investigates the four satipatthana for the purpose of uprooting the kilesas, which is the upadana, the clinging and attachment to this body. If one investigates with sati, how then can one not comprehend the body? How did the Lord Buddha get to comprehend his body and the bodies of others and the bodies of all living beings? Thus he is known as Lokavitu, the knower of all the worlds. The ability of Lokavitu is within the scope of both the Lord Buddha and the Savakas, except that the ability of the Lord Buddha is far more extensive and wider in scope, as befits the plane of the Buddha. Lokavitu means the true penetration and realization of all the Satchadhammas that makes the whole universe shake and tremble. There isn't a single living being that doesn't have any Satchadhamma. Some are complete and some are not. Sati and Panya have to be developed in order to become one form of Satchadhamma. This is the corrective Satchadhamma. Nirodha is the fruit of the Magga Patipada. But with Dukkha and Samudaya, they are found with every living being, every person, and every animal. For this is something inherent, something automatic and natural to the Vatthajaka that makes it be what it is. And it is influenced by the power of avicca. It is therefore necessary to investigate the body so that one can comprehend its nature. One has to look at the skin, going inwards. One has to compare what the skin is like on the outer side with what it is like on the inner side. And with just this skin, the inner and the outer are quite different. One has to get to see it clearly, for according to the truth principle, it is just that way. One has to investigate so that one can see according to the truth. And one should not contravene or go against the truth, which is the teaching of the Lord Buddha. The Lord said that it is patikula, filthy and impure. The external is already full of dirt and excrement, like the dirt on the surface of the skin. How can one not call it excrement? It is found all over, both on the top and on the bottom. But the top and the bottom are both supposition, like considering the head to be the top and the most important part. But the excrement does not take this into consideration, for it is also found on the head. There is excrement found all over the head and all over the body. Does this excrement give any credibility to this supposition? We must not be deluded, and we must investigate to see according to the truth. According to the truth of patikula, when it exists, and according to the truth of patikula, when it has passed away. When the body decomposes, it will then really exhibit its patikula nature. At this time, it is only wrapped up by the skin, just enough to make people worth looking at. But when we turn the skin inside out, how can we be worth looking at anymore? Both man and woman will become quite a horrible sight to see. There is only the skin that obscures the eyes of undiscerning people. It is only a very thin layer of skin. And yet, we are not capable of penetrating it. How then can we say that we have panya, the wisdom and the discerning ability? The Lord Buddha had penetrated it, and so had the Savaka. That was what their panya was like. We have to fathom into the truth, and we must not run against or go contrary to this truth by calling something that is not beautiful, beautiful, and something that is not attractive, attractive, by calling something that is not permanent, permanent, and by calling something that is not I, something that is impermanent, suffering, and not self, as I and mine. If we are constantly going against the Dhamma of the Lord Buddha, then it means that we are not capable of pitting ourselves against the kilesas. This is because when the kilesas direct us to go contrary to Dhamma, we follow right behind them. The kilesas always go against Dhamma. The kilesas contravene Dhamma. The kilesas oppose Dhamma. This is because the kilesas are always antagonistic to Dhamma. We must therefore resist them. Even if we want to see things, if the things that we see give rise to the kilesas, then we must not see them. Even if we want to listen to things, if the things that we hear give rise to the kilesas, then we must not listen. This applies to anything that comes into contact with the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, or the heart, and any kind of concocting and thinking about anything. If they give rise to the kilesas, then one must resist. One has to really restrain and curb oneself. Apart from that, one also has to dig and search into those kilesas that have already been established within one's heart. One has to see according to the truth principle. If one wants to look at a supa, one has to see it inside one's body. Is there a single part even as big as a grain of sand or a pebble that is not particular, filthy, and impure? There isn't any to be found, for this whole body is particular. Even if one uses a needle to pierce this body, one will only come across filth and impurities, and anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta. So are we still going to persist with our attachment to it? The Dhamma of the Lord Buddha is the instrument for clearing up things so that we can come to the truth. We have to really strive in our investigation to apply this Dhamma. We must not allow the kilesas to be constantly trampling on and damaging this heart. This is not something good. The kilesas are having a lot of fun, but we are going through a lot of dukkha, for we are under their influence and power. We have to really investigate. Gayanupassana Satipatthana. The Lord said to investigate the internal body, the external body, and the internal and external body. The Lord said, Gaye gaya nupasi viharati, achattava bahittava, gaye kaya nupasi viharati, and so forth. Investigating the internal body or investigating the external body or investigating the body in the body. These are all correct because they are all the truth if we investigate to see according to the truth. This body has no awareness. It only consists of all the various sense organs, like the eyes and ears, which have the function of receiving or perceiving the various sense data. But they themselves are not the citta, the one who knows. The true and genuine one who knows is the citta. The one who can perceive this very clearly is the practitioner of bhavana. Other people cannot possibly comprehend this. But it cannot be hidden from the practitioner of bhavana when the time comes for him to realize this truth. One will see that these things are merely instruments. When the citta withdraws itself from them, then even if there are the eyes, there will not be any sight, although the eyes are not blinded. For when the citta withdraws itself, the eyes cannot see and the ears cannot hear, and the experience of touch throughout the body will not be apparent. We can see from this discussion what is the principal cause of our awareness. It is the heart. But the heart of ordinary people diffuses and permeates throughout the body. And that is why it has to shoulder the burden of this body. This means carrying the whole body and all the excrement with it, because all of the filth and impurities are found right within this body. And it shoulders the burden of I and mine. This is because it doesn't know. For this reason, the Lord taught us to investigate to see the truth, either by way of particula or by way of anicca, for it is constantly in a state of change. It is ceaselessly changing, whether one is asleep or awake, or at any time. There isn't a single moment when the tilakkhana doesn't go on its own natural way. It is in a constant motion. While we are sitting here, this process is going on constantly. Anicca, the process of change, goes on continuously. Dukkha constantly weighs on and oppresses one. Anatta, is there such a thing as I and mine? The truth of these things is vividly pronouncing and proclaiming themselves right within us. When we investigate to see the truth of these things, we have to investigate following the truth and the natural principle. Then we will get to know this truth. Once we have realized this truth, then the attachment and the fixed views will withdraw themselves naturally. One doesn't have to pull or drag them out. We have to use panya to verify and come to see the truth, because the Dhamma principle is the principle of truth and reason. Then the citta will uproot itself. All the sights and sounds, smells, tastes and touches are all anicca, dukkha and anatta. They are all asupa and particular. When one has investigated until the heart is fully impressed, then one will let go of these things and withdraw within. Even with the body that one has been living with from the first day of birth to the present, when one fully understands, then one will withdraw oneself from it. One will not have any attachment for it. or take possession of it with upadana. One only takes responsibility for it and takes care of it. But one doesn't take it as I or mine. The citta is now the citta. The citta is now contented with itself. And it is not necessary for it to have attachment for these things. It no longer has to depend on them. Vetana is vetana. The citta is the citta. Dukkha, sukha, and neutral are all vetana. They are all anicchang, dukkhang, and anatta. Vetana, anicca. Vetana, anatta. Listen. When it is sukha, it is anatta. When it is dukkha, it is anatta. When it is neutral, it is anatta. Anicchang, they are all similar. What is there to cling to? These things arise and cease. It is their nature to do so. Sanya, sankhara, vijnana. They are each merely conditions. The citta is the citta. How can the citta cling to these things and take them as itself? For if it does, it will still have to go on revolving around like a football that is being kicked by the kilesas, rolling here and there, having to go through the various realms of existences. It is all over the universe, going from one birth to another, without itself being aware of it. It is like a blind person who doesn't know where he is going, because he cannot see. Wherever he is led, he will follow. Wherever the citta is led by the kilesas, it will follow. But it doesn't know where it is going. Although in various forms of existences, it has experienced extremely severe dukkha. It can be seen of this body that there isn't happiness all the time. There is also intense dukkha during the time of illness or any kind of pain or torment that arises within the body from whatever cause. Please don't ever think that it can bring one through happiness. This body will eventually have to turn into a mass of fire. And when there is upadana, then it will be extremely severe due to one's worry and confusion. The disease of the citta is really intense if one cannot investigate and catch up with the truth. In investigating to see the truth of these things, one has to do it so that one can clearly perceive it. If it is about anicchang, one has to do it so that one can see it clearly. Asupa and particula is extremely important. It is the principal point, the aspect that one has to investigate. One can investigate the external. One can also investigate the internal. One can do this many, many times, going over it again and again. One has to investigate. One has first to establish it as something pleasant, something beautiful. The kilesas fool us, so we also have to fool the kilesas. Then we have to establish it to decompose, disperse, and dissolve away, so that we can see it vividly within the heart. Because this is also the truth. When it has been clearly comprehended, then as far as letting go is concerned, there is no problem. This upadana is extremely heavy. How can one say that a whole mountain is heavy? Has anyone ever carried a mountain? Has a whole mountain ever oppressed or weighed down anyone? It has never taxed anyone. It just exists by itself. But this body is a parahave panchakantha. It is a very heavy burden. The Lord said, parahave panchakantha, the five khandha, are extremely burdensome. The Lord did not say that a whole mountain was extremely heavy or burdensome, but He did say it of the five khandhas. This is where one has to investigate. One has to look at the internal. One has to look at the external. Then one has to establish them to dissolve and disperse away. How can the kilesas consider them as something whole, as something pleasant, and as something attractive? This perception is going against the Dhamma. We have to investigate to see according to the truth, and according to the principle of Dhamma. Then we will be able to eliminate and subdue the kilesas. And then the notion of beauty and pleasantness will all disappear. The perception of permanence and lastingness will also vanish. The views of I and mine will all pass away. All of our worries will all go away. The upadana will be gone. Then we will have eliminated this heavy burden, getting rid of it out of the heart. The heart will then spring forth. This is the way of doing the investigation. This is how we have to do it. One has to be really earnest and serious. The Magga, Pala, and Nibbana are something of the present and are found within the citta. The kilesas are also of the present. They can arise at any time. Love, hate, delusion, infatuation, and aversion, anger and enmity can arise at any time. When there is an opportunity for them to appear, they will arise. They are not subjected to any specific time, nor do they have to go through any rituals. They can arise at any time when there is an opportunity for them to do so. In practicing Dhamma, one must therefore not select times when one will do it, like consulting an astrological chart or picking out the postures of exertion. are going through all sorts of rituals and ceremonies. One must rather do it earnestly and really commit oneself into the work of investigation. One has to focus one's investigation right at the place where the kilesas arise. What are they perceiving, presuming, and assuming about? Panya must follow to find out clearly what is going on. When one investigates many, many times repeatedly, one will get to see it clearly. This is how I practice. I have great concern for my fellow practitioners, as our living together is not something certain or definite. We are all anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta, and we are living amidst a world of anicjang, dukkhang, and anatta. So how can we find any certainty in this? There must always be parting from one another. If not during the time when we are still living, then definitely so when we pass away. So while we are living together, we have to really exert ourselves, putting our whole effort into it. At least, you must get something out of it. Don't let our living together be in vain. There is nothing in the whole world that is a greater memento than this Dhamma. Dhamma is terribly important. All you have to do is to get it into your heart. As soon as the Dhamma gets into your heart, it will then become the water that will extinguish the fires of the kilesas, tanha, and asava, that oppress and consume the heart, causing it to become reckless and go out of control. This is especially if we can totally extinguish them until there is nothing left behind, except just the khandhas, when there will not be a single kilesa that will be able to enter the citta. Then one is one who has totally rid himself of all burdens. One will have come to the end of one's work, the work that one has been struggling with from the beginning, and going through a lot of dukkha and torment from. When one has come to the end of one's work, at the moment when all the kilesas have been extinguished, this is what the Lord called Vusitang Brahmacharyam, the work that we have been struggling with endurance and perseverance, has now come to an end. At this very moment, when all the kilesas have been totally vanquished, and there is nothing else left within the heart has attained to absolute freedom. One will no longer have to seek for happiness. One will no longer have to bother with the past and the future, about life and existences. One will no longer have to be involved with them. One is now perfectly contented right within the citta. But right now the citta is very hungry, ravenous, restless and agitated, and constantly seeking and grasping here and there. And it is due to the influence of the kilesas. Can't we yet see the harm of them? All of these things are caused by the kilesas. Once one has totally rid oneself of the kilesas, then there will not be this grasping, restlessness, and anxiety. One will no longer be involved with thinking about the past or about the future, about birth and death, or about taking up the various forms of existences. and the happiness and suffering that one will have to endure in these forms of birth. One will not waste one's time thinking about them, because one has now truly realized and penetrated the truth entirely and absolutely. One has come to perfect contentment due to one's heart that has been purified. This is the value or the fruit of one's exertion and practice, in which one has to go through a lot of difficulty and trouble. There is an end to this work. The work of uprooting the kilesas can come to an end once one has arrived at that point, whether one wants to do it anymore or not. There is no problem. One will do the practice, but only as the Vihara Dhamma, the Dhamma of enlivenment. So long as the citta is still possessed with these khandhas, this is the enlivenment Dhamma of the citta and the khandhas. Why do we call it enlivenment Dhamma? This is because it will maintain the khandhas and keep them going until they come to cease when their natural time has come. When one has done a lot of work, one can get worn out in the khandhas. But the citta that has been purified, how can it get worn out? How can this citta incur a loss? Or what can it prevail against? With this citta, there is neither gain nor loss. There is no fear of death or living. There is no death or birth. All of these are not to be found once one has attained to that state or to that nature. The Lord Buddha walked Jhankama and sat in Samadhi and Samapatti as a kind of Vihara Dhamma for the citta and the khandhas that still existed together, and to maintain the khandhas until their natural days came to an end. This is the way of keeping the burden at a minimum. And it was the same way with all of the savakas. They would keep on doing whatever was the kind of practice that they were proficient in. Some were very skillful at sitting in samadhi bhavana and going through the samapattis, the various attainments of samadhi, like the Venerable Mahakasapa, who was able to enter into samapatti for 7 days at a time. He was able to enter into the Nirodha Samadhi. This was the way with those who had attained to the 8 samapattis. For those who had not attained to these samapattis, though they were still arahants, it was not necessary for them to enter into this samapatti. They could rest their hearts and cittas in just the usual and ordinary way, as the citta and the khandhas were still existing together until the end of the day of the khandhas. That was how they practiced. But the practice of these arahants was not for the purpose of uprooting any kilesas. What kilesas are there to be eliminated when all of them have been totally vanquished? All that is left is just the state of purity. What is there to correct or overcome? This state of purity is no longer concerned with the time and place. They were not worried about how and which way they might pass away. In whichever way he dies, this is the passing away of an arahant. whatever the cause may be, perhaps through an accident or some kind of illness, or whether he has to enter the state of samadhi before he passes away or not. It is not really significant. There is nothing that can obliterate that state of purity. He is always an arahant, at every moment and in every place. The reason why the Lord Buddha entered into jhana and the various samapattis and passed away into parinibbana in these samapattis was to show the mastery of the sasada, who was the great teacher of the world. After he had attained to enlightenment, he taught the world with the flair and strength of the sasada. All sentient beings can take up his behavior and conduct as their example and ideal, because he was always the complete and perfect sasada. Therefore, at the last moment, before he was to enter parinibbana, he exhibited his mastery and artistry of the sasada. For this reason, he went through the various stages of samapatti, beginning with the first, second, third, and fourth jhana, which are the rupa jhanas. Then he went through the four arupa jhanas and entered into the cessation of perception and feeling, or the sanya vedayita niroda. At that time, the Savaka Sangha, who were there in his presence, became curious and wondered what had happened to the Lord Buddha. So they inquired about him through the Venerable Anuruddha, who was skillful in the Parajita Vichara, the ability to read the minds and thoughts of others. No one else could surpass the Venerable Anuruddha in this respect. Some of the Savakas also possessed this skill, but they were not as good as the Venerable Anuruddha. So he was able to perceive and follow the citta of the Lord Buddha, who was going through the various stages of jhana. When the Lord Buddha has entered into the stage of sanya vedayita niroda, the cessation of vetana and sanya, this is the vetana of the kanda and not that of the citta. All of the savakas were concerned and wondered if the Lord Buddha had already entered into parinibbana. So they questioned the Venerable Anuruddha, who was constantly aware of what was going on, but who did not have to sit in samadhi and go through the samapattis. He had been constantly following the citta of the Lord Buddha that was going through the various jhanas. So when he was questioned by the savakas as to whether the Lord Buddha had already entered into parinibbana or not, he replied, "No, not yet. At this time the Lord is in the state of sanya vedayita niroda. And when the Lord Buddha withdrew from that stage, the Venerable Anuruddha then reported to the Savaka Sangha." He kept on reporting the various stages that the Lord Buddha was going through until he came down to the first level, the first jhana, and then back down to the ordinary level of the purified citta. He then related further, when the citta of the Lord went through the first jhana, the second jhana, the third jhana, and the fourth jhana, until he went out of the rupa jhana and entered into final nibbana between the rupa and arupa jhanas. He was not attached to a path into parinibbana in any of the jhanas. The Venerable Aniruddha then said, he has now entered into parinibbana, where nothing further can be said. If this is likened to an aircraft, then it is like flying in the air, that is totally empty of any clouds. When it is not possible for us to work out with our eyes how fast the plane is actually going, with the exception of looking at the speedometer, it will seem as though we are not going anywhere or moving at all. It is the same when there is no samuti to come into involvement with the one who has attained to ultimate vimuti and completely transcended samuti. Likewise, when the Lord entered into the jhanas, all the stages of jhana, from the first through the eighth, and including Nirodha, are all samuti. The citta of the Lord is completely vimuti. But when the vimuti citta of the Lord Buddha, or this purified citta, entered into any of the stages of jhana, it was possible for the Venerable Aniruddha to perceive. He was able to relate to others as the citta of the Lord went through the various stages of jhana, until he got to the last stage of samuti. This is the stage of sanya vedayita nirodha. He then went back down through the various stages of the jhanas. One who is skillful in perceiving the way of the citta is capable of knowing where the purified citta goes. The Venerable Aniruddha was able to say that the citta of the Lord Buddha was in this stage or that stage of jhana. But when this citta went out of samuti, then it is similar to an aircraft flying in empty space where there is nothing to serve as a point of reference. This is because there is no more samuti, because there is nothing to come into association. One doesn't know where one is going. But if there are some clouds, then one can tell. And it is the same way with the citta, that no longer has any samuti. Investigate this thoroughly. The one who knows about his khandhas. This nature that knows that at this time it is depending on this khanda as the instrument of its manifestation. When this purified citta has cast off the khandhas, then it will be the end of all samuti, both the coarse and the subtle samutis. None of the samutis will be found within that purified citta. So it is not possible to portray it following the way of samuti. It cannot be said in the samuti way, like being at this place or that place, for the place is still samuti. That place is samuti. This place is samuti. Where does this term purity come from, if it doesn't come from the citta that is now being wrapped and surrounded by the kilesas? Where are the kilesas? They are right within the citta. And where are the magga, phala, and nibbana, and the state of purity, if not within the citta? So this is where we have to do the correction. We must not look at other things, for this will be just a waste of time. we will just be speculating and conjecturing, and it will be totally useless. Let's get to the truth right here. Let's get to understand it. Why do we only hear about the stories of the other practitioners being free from dukkha and attaining to the Magga, Pala, and Nibbana at this place or that place, and about this and that Savaka attaining to Dhamma in this place and that place? Why can't we ourselves accomplish and attain to Dhamma? What is the reason for this? We are also human beings. The Dhamma Vinaya, which is the means of overcoming and getting rid of the kilesas, is the same instrument. The kilesas are of the same kind. Why can't we correct and overcome them? The problem is really in our ability. As far as Dhamma is concerned, there is no problem, because the Svakata Dhamma has been well taught. It has always been well taught since ancient times. It can always be used to eliminate the kilesas. All of the kilesas will be totally vanquished by this Dhamma. The one who is going to apply this Dhamma, how is he going to apply it? Is he going to do it out of weakness, or out of his fear of pain and hardship? If that is the way, then it is not possible for him to go on. Even when one is fully equipped with the instruments, one can still let one's enemies trample on and destroy one, if one doesn't use these instruments to contend with them. Even if one can study the Svakata Dhamma and commit it to memory like a parrot, it is of no benefit, because the kilesas are not afraid of this. They are only afraid of the practice that depends significantly on sati, panya, satta, and diligent effort. This is the fundamental principle. During the time of the Lord Buddha, or at this time, or in the future, the kilesas are always afraid of Dhamma. You have to really commit yourselves into the practice. Don't relent or let go of it. End of Deshana.